Every day we engage in it. Some may try to avoid it. Communication. Our way of communicating is shaped by various influences. And while I couldn't call myself a communication expert, I mean, just as my husband, I've noticed some changes in my communication style over the years. I hesitate to say I've grown, as I'm not entirely convinced of that either. Apparently now I'm very direct, which others have pointed out, but that's not how I perceive myself. I've faced both criticism and awe for my straightforwardness. Criticism seems absurd considering the endless cycle of judgment we experience in our world. Why does our society always default to being mean and trolly? Recently, someone told me that directness reads as impatient. That's a new one. Maybe it reads as just being 54. What other people think of me is none of my business. The origin of this is commonly attributed to Eleanor Roosevelt. However, Bette Midler had a character who said this to, maybe it was from the movie For the Boys, which I loved, by the way, such a good movie. When I was younger, I often shied away from communication, as the examples I had growing up were largely toxic. It partly stemmed from the 70s, when the child etiquette was still skewed to speak only when spoken to. The other influences were a bit darker and really not worth going into here. As I've aged, it's become clearer that stereotypically women have not been afforded the same voice as men. As women age, there's a cliche that we have finally found our voice, a sentiment rarely expressed about men. This isn't intended to spur a battle of the sexes. It highlights a misogyny embedded in our thinking. But here's the kicker. When a woman finally finds her voice, she risks being labeled as a Karen, as society attempts to silence any woman with a voice by using derogatory labels to instill fear about standing up for herself. Now, of course, there are the extreme Karens of the Karen concept, which I won't touch on, but those in need of that explanation might benefit from some reflection with a cup of tea, contemplating in silence for a while. Generally, we are not responsible for how others perceive us. Though I say generally, because if we're honest, we know when we're intentionally being an asshole. As women, we often apologize before asking for anything. Or maybe that's just a Canadian woman thing. If you're a non-Canadian woman listening, I would love to hear if this resonates with you as well. So for example, myself being a picky coffee drinker, I would express it in my orders. I remember while living in Austin, Texas, I was in a cafe and preemptively told the barista, "I'm sorry to be a pain. I'm really picky about my coffee. I'd like an extremely dry cappuccino. So when you make it, please hold on the milk. Think like a slightly wet macchiato." Yes, this is exactly what I would say. And yes, I told you, I'm picky. And while she was making it, I hovered and said, "Oh my God, I'm sorry, that's enough milk." And she kept going and finally stopped. And here's me. "I am so sorry. This isn't how I ordered it. Could you please remake it?" And she started arguing with me, trying to explain the craft and rules of baristaing. I said, "Honestly, we are not saving the world. It's just coffee. I'm not upset. I explained what I wanted and you essentially ignored me." People started staring at us. It was so dumb. She took it so personally. And I wasn't going to drink a cup of hot milk with a dab of espresso in it when I essentially wanted the opposite. Another example, I have the best rheumatologist in Toronto. Well, I always forget that I need to take my shoes and socks off. And on one of the visits, I removed my socks, revealing a clearly aged and very tattered pedicure, chipped polish on talons that one could hang from. I apologized for the state of my Shrek feet. And she looks at me and says, "Stop it. Stop apologizing. Do you think any of my male patients come in here and apologize for anything?" Absolutely not. And she's right. It's time that we do stop apologizing.
Welcome to the Fuck You 50s, the podcast for women who refuse to tolerate the bullshit anymore. This is real talk, real stories, and a long overdue reality check. I'm your host, Andrea Clare, and this podcast is the filter-free voice you've been waiting for, with a dose of F-bombs. The Fuck You 50s, unfiltered, unapologetic, and undeniably needed.
My guest today is Allison Habermel, founder and creative director of Habermel Design Group. Allison has spent nearly three decades in luxury interior design. And while she values mentoring the next generation, her chapter now is about owning her place in the industry, laser focused on doing work that aligns with her values, vision, and deep expertise. No compromises, no performative hustle, just meaningful, intelligent design with people who value what real experience brings. Allison loves to talk about the value of experience and why hiring women over 50 is a strategic move. She offers that we bring depth, clarity, and the kind of problem solving that only comes from years of actually doing the work. She does believe in building teams with a mix of ages. Everyone brings something important, but too often what gets rewarded is youth, filtered perfection, and the fake it till you make it mindset, rather than real know-how. Meanwhile, we've already made it. We've built businesses, weathered challenges, and refined our instincts over time. What we offer now isn't theory or guesswork. It's substance, confidence, and results. And it's time we start giving that the credit it deserves. Allison, welcome to the Fuck You 50s. Allison, you got my memo to wear the same like nice like blue color.
Uh-huh. Look at us.
I love it. It looks so great. You look fantastic.
Thank you.
I guess I just want to kind of jump in and just give our listeners like a little bit how we met. So it's funny because you're from Kitchener as well, right?
Yeah.
Are you from like originally from Kitchener?
Since 86. So, you know, I've been here a long time.
I grew up in Kitchener, Waterloo, Cambridge, like, you know, and then I moved to Toronto. But anyway, Allison and I met on a photo shoot where she was getting portraits done and I was doing her hair and we hit it off.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we had a lot in common, so we had lots to chat about.
Yes, absolutely. So tell me, you're in luxury interior design, right? Which I find like so fascinating.
It's so glamorous. I have a dark sense of humor, so here we go.
Honestly, everybody thinks that what I do for a living is glamorous. Yeah. And so the end result is always glamorous. You know, like you get, well, I guess not everyone can see, but like, these are some of my portfolio pictures behind me. But yeah, it's like the end result is always glamorous. It's like the behind the scenes, not so. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So I am an interior designer and I really do specialize in more of the luxury, mid to luxury, I would say, interiors, and mostly in the KW area, but traveled around too for that. I specialize in residential design and boutique-y type commercial design. So I only take a few of those on. I take on a great project.
And how long have you been doing this for?
Since 96. So okay. I've been in the field for quite a while, almost 30 years, hard to believe.
Wow. That's amazing. And have you seen like you must have, this probably a dumb question, but have you seen the kind of like a progression in your style, like from where you've started to now?
You know, that's a great question because I don't know if I really have. It's kind of interesting. Like I didn't start in design in the conventional way. I started working in community work, actually, with people without homes and street gangs and that kind of thing. And so I really honed my empathy skills with that.
That actually just gave me shivers, like literally. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So like for me, my design approach has always been empathy, like, and just really thinking what the client wants. So my design really has just maybe evolved. It's certainly gotten better over the years for sure. But like the actual style of it just really reflects my clients.
I feel often like when I'm working with like stylists and designers, like on like a photo shoot perspective, I find a lot of times they're kind of putting their like a heavy weight on their style for the client, where I feel like often it is about the client. So you need to make sure that like the work that you're doing is not overshadowing them, right?
I think so, because, you know, you leave the house when you're done and the people have to live there. So it has to work.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what's your team like? Like do you have a big team that you work with? Does it depend on the project or?
Actually, my work has scaled up. My team has scaled down. And then depending on the project we bring or accept, we bring on collaborators just so we can be experts in all different avenues of design. I have a great team. Like our small little team has been managing and we're doing really well with things that I thought we needed more people for. I think it's just when you get the team that understands each other and how you work, you can get a lot done.
Yeah, That's so true. I find that as well. Like with my industry, it's like you get it consistent with your style, and you know, it's just easier when you know that people know the work, right? There was one thing that you said when I sent you my pre-interview kind of form, and I really, really loved what you had said about mentoring and mentoring the next generation. How do you feel about mentoring and the next generation?
Okay, there's like, I have a love-hate relationship with it. You know, it's just a different generation coming up. Actually, I think they're super savvy and smart, and I think they have a lot of tools to learn quicker than what I had.
That's a good point.
So I give them that. But there is really nothing like hands-on experience. Like there just isn't. So to me, it's important to teach people that are coming up in the field that, you know, just argue with them a little, actually. I put them on the spot. They claim something works and I'll be like, no, I know on paper it works, but in real life it does not. I have this experience. So it's just letting them figure that out too on their own and saying, not I told you so, but there you go.
But I told you so.
So, but I, you know, you can sniff out people pretty quick who are just in it for themselves and just want to fast track their way through. I can either shut that down very quickly by just saying, just, you got to stop doing this, or I'm not the right fit. Like I'm not the right mentor for you.
I tell you, there's like so many parallels with your industry and my industry, and I guess because it's creative, but I also, when I read that in your like bio and that form that you sent back to me, it kind of got me thinking a little bit. And I was wondering, do you think that also could be influencing ageism?
Okay, for sure. Ageism is a thing. Like it's really difficult to be in any kind of design beauty industry. Like I'm in a beauty industry too. Like it's just with our homes, but the expectation is huge to stay looking young. And I'm really surprised at that. Like when I go to industry events, I'm like, we're designing homes here. We're not showcasing our face, our clothes, our hair, but you are judged so instantly by people if you don't have yourself together. And, you know, and I do fear a little bit about sort of just being aged out. I do talk about that openly. I mean, I'm being honest here. It's not something a lot of people in my industry want to admit, because with beauty, I mean, it's kind of obvious, but with design, it's a new kind of nuance that's happening. Like I'm really seeing this new generation of designers come in, and they're already fully Botoxed and fully lip injected and beautiful clothes that are designer. And I'm like, girl, how are you wearing, like, how do you afford that?
Yeah.
Doing this, you know, like it's really something. So the pressure's there. I haven't dipped my toe into that too much yet. But you know, will I? I don't know. I'm trying to fight it a little.
Yeah, it's definitely like once you rip that Band-Aid off, right? Mm-hmm. It's like I've had Botox. I used to get it, like I would kind of let it wear off because it doesn't last forever. And mm-hmm. then honestly, I haven't had Botox for over a year because I started thinking, like, when I get it done, do I actually look older?
Oh, interesting.
Just because of like the way that it like freezes your face.
This is such a huge topic for me because it kind of is reflective of everything. So I had to learn how to hand draw and do sketches. Like if I wanted to talk about my skill set, that's what I had to do. Like I had to prove myself that way. Now, you know, with Pinterest and HGTV, like I didn't have any of that when I started. So we were still kind of a mystery art form. You know, there is a respect for what we did as an art form. And, you know, I think that's changing so much because it's so available and everybody to some degree can teach themselves decorating, right? Like you can kind of cut and paste, and it's like the fast fashion world. It's similar. You can kind of fake it.
So you might be able to put together a pretty mood board for a client, but then when you're actually on site and then you're dealing with things that maybe a measurement's off, or the lighting is different, or, you know, like colors and, You know, like, I think you can't teach yourself that, right?
You can't. But here's the other thing that's been happening is our clients aren't as refined either then. Like, they don't always understand really good design because we're so used to, again, fast design. So, like, the level of quality has gone down, and the artistry of interior design, that mystery when, you know, you had that expert come in and you didn't have to look all glamorous. I mean, a lot of designers always did because it's sort of related to fashion. But that wasn't the focus here. Like, it was your art form. And so that's what's changed. So I've had to, like, really rethink how I approach how I want to represent myself in the design world.
And you're probably at an age as well, just with experience in the industry, where it's like you're almost kind of pick and choosing your clients too. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, like, that's the great thing about becoming older and wiser, for sure. You have that experience to know who you want to work with and who you don't want to work with. And sometimes you take a calculated risk to do a really amazing project. And I've done that before, and it's sort of like hell on earth, but you do it and you know how to navigate it and get through it and get out on the other side of it. But then, you know, for the most part now, I really hold ground on just working with people I want to work with. And these are people, again, like, I find they have more empathy. I don't know if I attract this out there, but I have a lot of clients in the medical field and specialists who have wild schedules and, you know, just such a busy life. And I don't know, we get each other in a way. Like, I'm really available for them, and I don't mind texting them on a Sunday night. I don't, because we have this really cool relationship. And so that, you know, they know this is a skill set that we have.
And so when you come across, like, a challenging client, how do you navigate that?
I look at why they're being challenging, and you kind of get to the core of it pretty quick. At least I do. It's like, ultimately, what do you want here? Like, do you want it to impress your friends? Don't be shy. Just tell me that. Like, if that's what you want, that will be our focus. Even though you can afford anything, do you still want a budget to follow? And do you want to have it live on our program where you can check in all the time? Like, if you want that, we'll do that for you. So I think that's the key, is being adaptable and flexible with the type of person you're dealing with, because we're all different.
I asked this question too, because I had somebody earlier before our chat today called me for some advice, and they're younger than I am, and they're working on a project where they were having some issues where a client was just suddenly, like, changing from their original concept. And they were saying that they get kind of teary sometimes in these high stress situations. And I don't know about you, but I used to be like that too, where I would, and it's like, you're trying to have this conversation with somebody and you're like trying to kind of fight back tears. Cause, like, here you are, like, you're the hired professional. And I don't know if men go through this. I mean, I can't imagine it. Anyway, my advice to them was, think of it as you're the fixer. I was just like, it's not a you thing. It's kind of a they thing. So just be the fixer. And so how do you feel about that? And was there a time in your career where you were also that teary person in conflict, or maybe it was behind doors?
Yeah. I mean, totally. I was that person. I really was. But again, because I just take things personally. I do. I mean, that's who I am. I kind of give everything to people. Like, when I commit to a project or a friendship, like, I'm that loyal friend for you. So that's good and bad, right? So I've had to learn to toughen up. I've had to learn not to take it so personally. And, you know, when I was approached by someone once doing a huge job for them, and they reamed me out in front of all the trades that were having a lunch break. Like, I know it was an intimidation tactic. Like, I know we were standing in the middle of that room with everyone around us for a reason. Like, he knew I'd be vulnerable. And I got emotional. I'll never forget that day. And he was being so unfair. But I started crying. And it was really tough. I'll never forget that. And to that, since that day, I let myself walk out of a room. Like, I just let myself never be vulnerable like that in front of someone who's a bully. And so that changed me a lot. And now, you know what? I sleep at night. Well, other than being menopausal, I sleep at night. I don't worry about that stuff. Yeah. I'm the expert. I really have a solid foundation on what I'm talking about. And so it's a great feeling when you get older and you have experience under your belt that you can just stand there and go, no, actually you're wrong. Like, even with trades, like, the sexism part is huge in this industry. And me doing all the interior design and everybody looking to the male contractor or the male architect for the answer. And I'm like, hello, I'm the one that designed it. Ask me.
We're going through renovations for our basement right now, because last year we had the flood in the basement. I think I shared that with you before.
Yeah.
And I sent an email about something about the project, and I literally am the only woman. Nobody replied to me. And then when my husband sent a follow-up, then they replied. And it pissed me off, because it's like, what the hell?
I know, it still happens. It's getting better. It's getting better. And I'm speaking out about it too, like on job sites. I actually call people out on it now.
Yeah.
You know, I started documenting. I started being a little more calculated with how to approach this sexism that happens. And so I made people put things in emails. If they texted me, I'd screenshot it. If they were in a crowd or like in a group when we were on a job site and they were starting to say things, I called them out on it. You know, I'm holding them accountable too for this. I mean, this is not everybody. Like,
yeah,
I've been finding the trades and the people that work on equal ground, and it's been lovely. It's just been so wonderful to build that kind of camaraderie. And I ask them, I'll say, do you want this really amazing, incredible project here? I'm just doing this now. I'm interviewing contractors. And I said, can you work with strong women? Like, my team's strong. My client is super strong woman. You have to be okay with this.
Does anybody ever say no?
No, everyone says they're fine with it. It's the people that go, yeah, but that I, you know, it's red flags. I really hope it's getting better. I think the more we talk about it, the better it will become, or people will be aware, or, you know, the people that aren't as open-minded, let's say, maybe just won't talk as much. Like, just like keep it to themselves.
Amazing. But I definitely want to circle back to your drumming.
Well, you know, for me, there's a few things here that I thought would be kind of fun to touch on. And as we get older, I think sometimes we forget that we can learn new things. So it's really related to other creative industries or things to do and hobbies. And so when I turned 50, I learned how to play drums. I thought it'd be fun to bring that up. And I also learned how to paddleboard. Both things I had wanted to do for years.
Like the stand-up paddleboard?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I just need to be clear, because I don't do stuff like that. We bought a cottage last summer. I sound so arrogant. We bought a cottage last summer. We got stand-up paddle boards, but I'm afraid. So how long have you been doing paddleboarding for?
Well, I'm 54 this summer, so it'll be almost 4 years.
Okay. All right. So I'm 54 this year, and I've never done a paddleboarding before, but So I've had both of my hips replaced.
Oh, wow.
And I'm just afraid of falling, mm-hmm. and then being like on the lake and not being able to get back up. I need one of those, like those necklaces. Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. I've been told that it's hard to fall off of them, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure that I can master the falling off.
Yeah. It's not super easy. I think just start on calm water, and you stay calm. And you know what? If you just have to go on your knees or sit almost like on a canoe and just paddle, do it. Like, The joy of it is to get out on the water. It's very meditative. You can make it into exercise, but who wants to do that? You just want to like go out in the water. And when you lay down, you're almost at water level. It's so fabulous. And you just float. I don't know about you, but I'm a floater. I just love that feeling. So, you know, part of me just wanted to get out and float. Yeah. But the paddleboard part, yeah, just you'll get it. There's some tips there I can text you about that I learned.
I will take those tips happily. Now let's circle back to your drumming because that's really cool. Yeah. So I went to I don't know, you probably know this area being from Kitchener Waterloo, but since 1986. But I went to Stanley Park Senior Public, and I took drums there. It was and everybody had to pick an instrument, right? And I don't know why. I don't know why, but I think in my head I thought there's no way I can figure out how to play a trumpet or flute. Those all seemed hard to me. So in my mind, I'm like, I'll play drums. And maybe it's like a redhead thing. I'm also working out some anger, I guess. But so I always joke around because my youngest daughter is in a band. And I always say to the drummer, I can do a mean flam. So where are you at in your drumming? And I'm assuming you're not in a band. Or are you? That's a dumb thing for me to say. You could be in a band.
Okay. So a really quick backstory. The motivation to get into drums was just I wanted to learn an instrument, and like you, it was one that I felt I could learn because I don't know how to read music. So that was sort of the sum of it. But the backstory is my brother was a drummer.
Okay.
And I was raised in a pretty conservative home with very traditional roles, I guess. Very traditional roles. So women didn't play drums, and I always wanted to. So it was just always in my mind to do that. My husband is a bassist. And so he had a couple of bands, and he was like the hardcore grunge rocker guy. And so I went to all the concerts and everything. And I just sort of learned to love that kind of music. And so when the pandemic hit, and everybody was looking for something to do with their spouses and or the people in your home that you're stuck looking at forever, I said, I want to learn drums. So we ordered a kit and we started. And he was so patient. We just played together. It became a thing. We'd grab a couple of drinks and we'd crank the music and play. And I learned. And I love it. And I'm not good at it, but I really like it.
That's so cool.
Yeah. It's great at getting out anger, frustration and all that. Yeah. And I would love the opportunity to play live sometime. I think I would say that and I kind of break out in a sweat, but I think there might be something there.
Yeah, absolutely. You totally should. But you know, when you were saying that you're just kind of, when you think about performing, you get that like sweat. So that's like me with Second City. So Second City, I've been wanting to take it for years and years. I was highly active in theater when I was in high school. I had the best drama teacher. Shout out to Miss Baltus at Preston High. Then getting into this part of my industry, and I've always thought about doing Second City. And then I finally signed up for it. So I'm starting in May. But whenever I would go by Second City downtown, I literally would start getting this sweat stress, you know, just thinking, and I hadn't even signed up for it yet. I was working on a TV commercial recently where a woman that was in the commercial is a comedic actress. And she said, this is your body telling you that you need to do it.
Yeah, totally do it. Because I don't know, that is the best, actually. When you get the sweats and you start, you know, having that kind of reaction, I don't know if it's a visceral reaction, whatever that is. It's time to jump.
I like how we take it as our body is telling us to do this, whereas some other people might be my body's telling me don't touch this with a fucking 10-foot pole.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe it's a huge warning, but for me, again, the beauty of getting older is any time that I've jumped and have done something really outrageous like that, just dove in, something amazing happens out of that. Truly, I have a list of things, not tons, but certain things in my life, pivotal moments like that.
I love that.
Yeah. And so, you know, you recover, you know, the fear of it all, and then you recover from it, and then you do it, and then you're like, wow, I did it. I did that. And if you love it, you keep going.
I think so too. And I know it's a cliche to have your bucket list items, and, you know, it might not be something that's been in your brain for like 5 or so years. Maybe it just kind of pops up, but definitely. And I love how you were saying that it's kind of like, you're never too old to do something. And I feel like now is the time.
For sure. And I mean, I guess there is a point when maybe you're too old to do certain things, but you just adapt, you know, you adapt somehow. I don't know. I'm going to keep going until I can't do things anymore.
What else is on your list?
Well, I think the live music thing would be something on my list. No,
I'll come.
That might be a big warning. I'm breaking out in sweat, and that might actually be like, no, don't do that.
It's a glistening beauty glow. It's not a sweat. Yeah.
And, you know, I think getting into art again, like when I got out of high school, I traveled Europe and I was for sure going to be an artist. That was it. And, you know, just rebel against my strict upbringing and do something super creative. And I ended up going into the community work and then design. But I think at some point I'd like to open that chapter of being an artist again and just experimenting with that. And I think that's something that's waiting for me.
Yeah. I love your work. I've been on your Instagram like so many times and just like checking it out. It's just like your style is so beautiful. Like I would say your style is kind of what I would gravitate to as well. And I'm not a doctor.
Thank you.
Do you have a favorite project that you've worked on?
I was thinking about that. I had this opportunity to do a bachelor's place. This is, again, a doctor moved from Toronto from a loft, so super contemporary loft, moved to Cambridge, Ontario, bought this suburban house in an area with just little kids running everywhere. And the poor guy was like, wow, what did I do? Right. And so when he hired me, we just took a very unconventional approach to his house. We changed rooms that didn't make sense for him. And, you know, like, for instance, in his dining room, we wiped out the dining room and made it into a lounge, like a wine lounge. Because on top of being like this major medical specialist, he was becoming a sommelier.
Oh, wow.
We catered to that, you know, and and then in his office, his home office, we did this really awesome swivel door, very futuristic looking. And like, I had an open house there with potential clients, and I got hired 2 projects because of that door.
Oh, wow.
So like, just interesting details like that. He was great to work with. And I would say, you know, the lesson there, if I'm going to give a lesson on anything about design, is that don't be afraid to design for who you are and what you really, really want. And don't worry about reselling your house. Like everybody says, if I do this, it won't be sellable.
Oh my God. I need to highlight this portion, and my husband needs to listen to this over and over and over again.
Yes.
He'll come out of his office as he's listening to it and shake his head at me. I know.
What's his name?
His name is Jeff.
Jeff. Don't worry about reselling. And I'll tell you why. Here is why you don't have to worry about decorating for yourself and reselling your house later. It's because, first of all, you love your house when you're living in it. And if you do go to sell, like my client did, this was not his forever home. He's back in Toronto in his like loft area again, is because his house sold for higher, like record price. The wallpaper was wild in that place. 2 stories, not easy to replace. So it wasn't for everyone, right? Like someone would walk in, probably go, oh my, this is like way too much. But someone walked in and said, I love this house so much. And they just had to have it. And so they bought it. And so, you know, there's a buyer out there for that.
I that's kind of like my thought process too. It's like some of the kind of far-fetched ideas that I might have, like there are going to be people out there that like it as well. Like with our basement renovations, I want it. We have like one, like a little theater corner where it's like a cinema screen. Hmm. I sound so obnoxious, but
a cottage, a cinema screen. Man, you've made it, girl.
So I wanted to paint the walls red, and he wasn't like sure about it. And then someone else kind of came in to give a perspective, and then they added, oh, you should also paint the ceiling black. So do the walls red. And it's only going to be in where the cinema screen is. It's not the entire basement. And I was surprised that he went for it. Yeah. So shout out to Jeff for finally agreeing to something far-fetched that I want to do. So before we wrap up, Allison, I saw on your website that you have a charity initiative. Can you talk about that? It looks really interesting.
Yeah, it's called Designing Back. And during the pandemic, I launched it. I had employees that needed to do some creative work, but everything was locked down and work was not there. So we were able to design people's homes virtually in exchange that they would donate to a charity of their choosing. And then when the world opened up, I gathered a team of creatives, and they were all interviewed, of fashion stylists, musicians, et cetera, artists. And we would meet and collaborate and help people and other organizations that might need like a bit of a boost. So we used our creative skills, and we would either raise money, like have a concert or whatever, and give back to that charity. So we kind of swoop in and help people and swoop out and go on to the next. And it's really intended for creative people because we just think differently. We think outside the box. Yeah. And there's so many different charities and initiatives out there that need help. And so that's sort of where it began.
Honestly, I really think this is fantastic. And if at any point in time you're working on a project where you could use a hair and makeup artist, I'm in.
Oh, great. I would love that. Done.
Wow, this has been such a great conversation, and I could keep going on forever. Is there anything else that you want to kind of like throw in? Or I love your self-reflective kind of statement that you made, that it's like, I'm here, this is where I belong. That was in the notes that you sent me. Anything from an inner monologue that you might want to share?
Well, I think that women in general are overlooked a lot. And I think we do have to work twice as hard at things. And I know people say that's changing, but in the political kind of world we're living in right now, it feels like we're stepping backwards. And I think it's all the more reason to claim your spot and your place in your career, especially. And, you know, when I say I belong, or I feel like I belong now with what I'm doing, it's really about the confidence. It's when I can say no to a client. It's when I can ask for more money because I want to be paid fair. I want to, you know, I'm not doing this for free. And just feeling like I can talk that way, that feels to me like I've made it. You know, I do think that there's a place for excelling and not being afraid to excel. And I think there's a place to give back as well. I think our world needs more love and patience, and not be so polarized too. And I learned that. Those were my early lessons in my community work. And I think the empathy that comes out when you learn how to communicate with all kinds of people and get your point across. Some are loud and some are quiet. I'm the quiet one. I'm the introvert. I have girlfriends. Hey, both of them are redhead, who are the loud, outspoken. They're the front line. If we're going to war, they're the front line people. Like, yeah. I'll take care of you people. Yeah. Let me go at it. And I love that. I'm the one in the back, you know, negotiating quietly, you know, being nice to the bad guys so that they give us some bread.
It's so funny for me. I do feel like I have the potential of being like both sides, like the loud, you know, redhead, and I'll go to bat for other people, but I still find going bat to bat for myself, it's still hard for me.
Yeah. You know what I think that is? I think if you talk to a lot of women, they would say that, whether they're extroverts, introverts, or whatever. And I really think it's because we weren't taught to stand up for ourselves. You know, I think it was, we were taught to just be quiet and step aside and just put up with it, and that we are lesser than, so therefore you can't speak up. And so I really do think there's an element of that coming from all women to some degree. And so I hope that's changing.
Yeah, I feel it. I feel it's changing for sure. But I agree with what you said earlier. Like, it's there, we can see a change, but I think it's happening a bit too slow. And I mean, maybe with more kind of conversations like this that people have, and like you were saying, like you stand up, you know, when you're on a job site or something, you don't tolerate that mm-hmm. anymore. And I just think, just kind of like what I say about with this podcast, like women that are like fed up and don't want to tolerate the bullshit anymore. Which is a great note to end on.
I'm for that.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Allison. It was such a great conversation. It was so nice to see you again. And I hope that we reconnect again in person for sure. Maybe it'll be at one of your drumming concerts.
Maybe. I'll let you know.
Thanks for tuning in to the Fuck You 50s. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to follow and rate the podcast. And we'd love to connect with you on Instagram, so be sure to follow us at the Fuck You 50s. The Fuck You 50s is hosted by Andrea Clare and edited and produced by Bespoke Productions Hub. See you next time.